Welcome back to Don't Slam Your Podcast. I am your 2.4 host, JD Collins, and you're joining me for the Halloween special. I know many of you will be turning to BBC iPlayer or BritBox to watch The Lady Vanishes and Carry On Screaming, but I thought it would be a good opportunity on the spookiest day of the year to release an episode which would take a deep dive into Andrew Marshall's 2002 to 2003 supernatural drama, Strange. It centres on John Strange, a defrocked priest who was implicated in a series of murders which he claims were committed by demons. And he joins forces with Jude, a nurse and single mother who also believes in such supernatural occurrences and occurrences that, shall we say, hit close to home. Today's episode, I will be joined by Simon Dunn, who you met on the episode where we discussed health and efficiency. Now, before we go into the review, I just have a few updates to give you. Firstly, the 2.4 Chum book is coming along quite well. I have interviewed more people and I have some more lined up in the not too distant future. So do keep an eye out for the updates. Also, I'd like to give a shout out to the Insanely Dangerous Retro Pod Show. This is a podcast which looks at all kinds of retro nostalgia from the 80s and the 90s. And they most recently uploaded an episode about 2.4 Chum, where they deep dive into the series and discuss a couple of episodes. And they also gave me a nice shout out as well. So thank you very much, guys. So please find the Insanely Dangerous Retro Pod Show, and they are available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you very much for joining me. And here we go into the deep dive into the world of Strange. Simon, thank you for coming back onto the podcast.
My pleasure.
Because I remember the last time you were on here in January, we were talking about health and efficiency.
We were, yes.
And it was there was a bit of a discussion about Strange.
Yes.
I think we both said we wanted to watch it. So now, for our Halloween show, it makes sense to...
Well, we had an excuse to watch telly, so yes. Why not take it?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, exactly. And so it's a spoiler-free review like we did with Health and Efficiency.
Yep.
And so,
more spoilers in this than perhaps in the sitcom.
yeah, there's probably more to say here. So, but yeah, we'll do our best for people who've not seen it. I mean, we had to, as with the other shows, unfortunately, have to watch it not on a streaming service because it's not available. But
yeah.
I don't promote it, but if you want to watch it, you can.
Well, it's not commercially available.
No.
So that's what I look at. If it's commercially available, then you should go and watch it commercially.
Yeah. That's I have the same feeling about it because it's some things you just want to watch and yeah. It's not easily available.
Absolutely.
So the premise, as I mentioned in the introduction, is about a former priest who's dismissed by the clergy following the implication of a series of murders, which he thinks are committed by demons. And then he partners up with a nurse called Jude, who the idea of demons and the threat of demons hits relatively close to home. So before we go into the full details, bear in mind, both of us watched this for the first time in full. What did you think of Strange?
So it's going to be me deciding what I thought of Strange whilst we talk, because for want of a better word, it's a strange show, which, you know, obviously it's lived to its raison d'etre in that sense. I had to keep looking at when it was made, and it amazed me that it was made in 2002 and 2003, because it felt like it was made in 1997. And I know that's a really specifically weird thing to say, but it took me a moment to realise what I meant when I thought that. It reminds me so much of that kind of there was like a 3-year window of pre-millennial sort of horror that was about the end of days, the end of the world. Like,
yeah.
So end of days specifically, millennium.
Yes.
Got very unfairly, well, I don't know if it's unfairly, it often gets compared to The X-Files and Buffy, but I think it sort of shares a bit more with Millennium, which is the X-Files spin-off with Lance Henriksen, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, which I've never seen all the way through. I always start watching it and I get to about series 2 and then I never quite get much further than that.
Yeah.
Because that's a very dark show, that one.
It is,
And so it felt to me like it was part of that oeuvre, for want of a better word. Is that fair, do you think?
No, I agree in terms of it. I read about the Buffy comparisons from the time, and bear in mind, I like Buffy. I'm a fan of it. I think those comparisons was just because Buffy was the thing at the time.
Yeah, I think it's an unfair comparison to Buffy. Buffy's all about using demons as metaphors and whatnot. And growing up, but it's not that.
No, and I found it very British in a way. It was a very British show.
Incredibly British, and some of the best bits of it are really British. We'll get to them, but particularly the fight on the stairs was the most British sort of Andrew Marshall-y type thing.
Yes, I ended up really enjoying it by the end.
Right, so yes, me too.
It took me a couple of episodes to get into it a little bit. I think probably because what I was watching, the recordings I watched were a little bit grainy in the beginning.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
And then as it went on, I think even though, bear in mind, these were the 2003 BBC One broadcasts, actually the quality was both of the visual, the image and the sound was actually not bad. I ended up watching the final five episodes in one day because I was actually enjoying it that much.
Yeah, I watched four yesterday.
Yeah, and it is weird to think that there was a time where BBC One had a horror series.
Yeah, it's quite an unusual thing for the BBC to do. They do sort of like October-type, Christmassy-type horrors.
Yes.
And I think there's a book coming out about the BBC Christmas horror.
Oh, nice. Shows, that'd be good.
Which would be good. I can't remember who writes it, sorry. But yeah, as a kind of sort of running show, it's sort of more skews sci-fi when it does that sort of thing, doesn't it? Rather than demon-y. Well, Apparitions, I believe, Joe Ahern, who was directed three of these episodes, went on to make and write for Martin Shaw, which is also about a vicar, but that's more about exorcisms and
angels and things. It's, I think in a way it feels like a natural progression from 2.4 Children for Andrew.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there's certainly a horror, and we talked about the body horror in Health and Efficiency as well, didn't we, before?
And then in 2.4 Children, there's the Don't Go Maya scene with Bill underneath the car park tunnel. And then, the cut scene that seems to be lost to time, unfortunately, with demonic eyes is what they used for... Well, I don't know if they used those as exact visuals, but when you see the demon eyes in Strange, it gets an idea of what that scene in 2.4 Children.
They excised a bit from 2.4 Children, did they?
More or less, yeah. They used an element of it, but I'm not sure if it's the exact visual from 2.4. But I think it's really cool to think that was something that came from a sitcom.
Well, horror and comedy share a sort of shape, don't they? I mean, the idea of building up tension and then releasing it.
Yes.
I remember I went to see Ghost Stories, the Andrew Nyman and Jeremy Dyson theatre show. It was when Andy Nyman was doing it himself after Reese Shearsmith did it. But I'd never seen horror things live before, and I hadn't really watched much horror in the cinema either. And what struck me about it was how much laughter there was after the jump scares.
Yeah.
That kind of release of tension.
It's my favourite play. I've seen it four times.
I don't blame you. It's fantastic. What did you think of the movie?
I liked the film. I did enjoy it. I think there was things they had to change.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I was impressed by it overall. You?
Yeah. Yeah, no, there was such a distance between seeing it in the theatre and seeing the film that I couldn't really compare the two in my head. And they were different enough that you don't need to anyway. But if you can go and see Ghost Stories, you definitely should.
And I think actually that they're very British, and the film is British in the same way I say about Strange. It definitely feels like, which is why I get annoyed by the Buffy comparisons, because Buffy is very American, very California, should I say.
Very specific and deliberately California,
And so when I think about horror subgenres, you think of there's like vampires, Buffy, Angel, True Blood, Vampire Diaries, zombies, like The Walking Dead. And so demons is a very broad idea, I think, as a kind of concept, because it's not just satanic, you know, guy in red with horns and a pitchfork and a tail. It can be anything, really. And it can be a person.
Exactly, yeah. And the fact that the Demonica encyclopedia they have lists thousands suggests that, you know, this could have gone much longer.
Well, that's the thing, the mythology of it and the different kinds of demons that are explored in the series is very much, as you say, that you can see it's a very, I think people have a very, very narrow view of what a demon is and what it looks like. So I think in this show, they're exploring it in a really interesting way. And as you say, it definitely had legs for more.
Well, it was a procedural and it was like a monster of the week as well. So
it
could easily have gone longer.
The thing about what I find with episode to episode is whereas something like X-Files had the balance of a mythology and standalone, which were very separate, and then in the later series there was a little bit of intertwining. This is done in, I think, a more it even though it is mythology,
improvisational.
I'm trying to think of the right way. It feels like it's building into something bigger. There's something greater going on in the background.
I felt that the problem with the first two episodes for me was that we didn't really know who Strange was.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was a deliberate choice. But we're going to make these comparisons to the X-Files. And like I said, I think it's a little unfair, but it's inevitable. And where we found Mulder at the very start, we knew exactly who he was and what his backstory was.
Yeah.
While, you know, that got massively expanded through the episodes, you knew exactly why he was who he was. And the mystery element of who Strange is a good arc through the series, but I think it detracted a little from the first two episodes, not really getting a handle of what, you know, why is he doing this?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things about Strange, and this is weird how much TV changed from 1999 to 2002, in a way that I don't feel like where we're in now, 2022, feels too different to 2019, is there is actually quite a lot in terms of interviews for Strange by Andrew Marshall, and there's a website. The cult,
I was going to say, it had it a whole BBC website, didn't it? Yeah. Is it still there?
It's still there. It's still archived. Wow. I'll send a link on the social media later. It's really good. But what happened was there was a pilot that was released shown in March 2002. Then it was brought back for a full series, and that aired in May 2003. But they didn't repeat the pilot. So essentially, and I think I've read Andrew Marshall saying this, that they had to more or less do a second pilot.
Yeah, he felt that the first episode of the full series was a second pilot. I read that as well somewhere, yeah.
And so I think in a way it almost feels like it's having to do anything. And I think going back to the X-Files again, a lot of people compare the second episode, it's the pilot episode where Mulder and Scully are assigned to work together, then the second one is a case they work on. And I feel a lot of people describe that as a second pilot, and it works because you kind of know the premise of the show is two people who work together and investigate crime. So in a way, the pilot is just a bit of backstory. Whereas with this, it makes a bit no sense. Well, not makes sense. You have to learn exactly why a deordained priest and a nurse are investigating these weird occurrences together.
Yeah, the FBI setting makes logical sense. Yeah. These two people, while they might not get on, are pushed together and to work together. So, yeah, how does a nurse get together with a defrocked vicar to hunt demons? Yeah, you have to restate that premise almost every episode, I would have thought.
And I think for me, what you find as the episodes go on is what their drive is, why they're doing what they're doing. So with Strange, he is, as I say, he was implicated in murders, and then we learn a bit more about that, like someone some very significant person was one of those people. And then with Jude, there was an incident in her life in the pilot, which means that demons hit close to home. And so one of the things that happens in the episodes is a lot of it is her trying to learn about it and seeing about how much of a threat it genuinely is to her own life. And that's what I found really interesting as it went on. This is why I sort of say, in a way, you have to watch every episode. It's not like X-Files where you can dip in and out, and you have to see them and know why they're doing it, because it follows on from the week before.
Yeah, there's an arc to the characters definitely through it. And as you say, the inciting incident for Jude in the pilot is so big and one time that you can't really then restate that each time.
Yes.
you know, avoiding spoilers. But so yeah, it's a tough trick, that second pilot. It's Zoxin, wasn't it, the second one? Yeah.
Yeah.
With the fun sort of mirror writing things.
So we go on to the characters now, and I think, and then the actors who played them. So Strange is played by Richard Coyle, who at the time was in Coupling, and he most recently was in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And I think in the beginning, he's very, as you say, very, you know, we don't know a lot about him. There is a mysteriousness about him, a little bit like, do you trust him or not? As you say, with Mulder, you can trust him straight away. But I like the fact with Coyle, with Strange, you're never quite sure what his moral compass is until later on.
Well, the fact that can we talk about it? The premise is he's defrocked.
Yeah.
You know that something has gone wrong. You hope that it's a good something. I don't know if that's the right way of putting it. And I think it's a really good choice of casting, actually. It wouldn't have been like my first sort of thought to take him, but he's really good.
Yeah.
And really sort of, not quirky, because that's not the right word, but he's not conventional.
No.
You maybe it suffers a little in that you don't quite believe that he would have been a priest, maybe. Although you kind of believe that he could be an ex-priest. I don't know.
Mm. So I think it would have been interesting to learn a bit more about his faith later on. I mean,
on a wider note, there was a sort of distinct lack of faith. And we'll get to Ian Richardson's character, but he sort of, at one point, even just dismisses the idea of prayer.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really funny line in and of itself, but sort of speaks to that idea that perhaps the higher up in church you get, the less invested you are in the spirituality of the church, perhaps.
Yeah.
But there's not much of that actually going on in the series.
Yeah, it's. I think... For series one, I mean, in the end, the complete series, but had it been a series one and been more, that could have been explored a lot more. I think, it feels to me like, I almost feel, comparing it to other shows, you almost have an idea of where it would have potentially gone next. Obviously, Andrew would have had his own ideas, but it definitely feels like that would have been expanded more. So then he works with Jude, who's played by Samantha Janis, who's now obviously Samantha Womack. He was an ex-scientist, now a nurse, and is a single mother as well.
Andrew writes women really well. I think.
He does.
And that really sort of jumps out at you all the way through the series, actually. They are characters who happen to be women rather than men writing female characters.
Yeah, I agree. I feel she has a very serious look about her, in the sense that again, I'm trying not to do the X-Files comparisons here, but she has got a bit of a Gillian Anderson approach of not feeling like she's in a horror program where the actors look shocked all the time. She's a bit more kind of, a bit more matronly in a way, which is ironic considering she's a nurse.
Yeah, maybe that's a deliberate thing. And so go to that wider idea of the sort of the demonology versus technology and science.
Mm.
I thought, the big difference, and again, we're going to X-Files again, I'm sorry, but the big difference with the X-Files is the X-Files sort of divorces the two, and it's like, okay, these two things can't live together. Science and the reality of the X-Files world can't live together.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's more like, okay, we have a more modern understanding of these more ancient things now.
Yeah.
And there was never any kind of conflict between the two.
No.
And Strange was like, there is a scientific reason for these ancient things. We just have a better understanding of it now.
Definitely. I mean, it's just in the first episode alone with the electricity.
Yeah.
And that actually is something that's done in Stranger Things. I know Andrew should sue the Duffer Brothers for that one.
But yeah, I like her character. I think Jude, she's really interesting. She's not what she could have been.
Yeah.
By lazy writing, if you see what I mean.
I feel she is constantly, I feel like she's someone who is open to the idea, doesn't want to believe it in another way, but also is, when her eyes are open, she sees it clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no denial. It's like, okay, now I need to rationally explain what I've seen.
Yeah, and not perfect either.
No.
You know, and she just has, I don't know, they work really well together as a duo. And I know in the BBC press pack that they did for Strange, Andrew talked about his enjoyment of the Avengers and the X-Files. And so you can sort of see that there. But going to the one thing I didn't get a vibe of at all, which does detract from this whole Mulder and Scully thing, I never got a vibe that there was any intention, certainly in this series, to make them a couple or there being any sexual chemistry or tension or something between them. Did you get a vibe at all?
No, absolutely not. And I'm not sure I wanted to.
No.
To be honest.
It
wouldn't have felt the right choice. I mean, it may have developed into that, but these are two very different people.
I love the conversation they have at the end of the last episode, where you learn a bit more about why they're working together. You almost feel they have found their mutual understanding and respect. And I like the fact that you're showing a man and a woman who are just working together.
Yeah,
might not like each other. It's platonic. Yeah. Might not like each other, but they work together well. And that you don't see that. Very rarely do you see that on TV.
No, I mean, the natural inclination of those things is to, oh, who's going to pair up? And I find that very uninteresting a lot of the time.
I agree.
And the way they kind of use humour, the two of them, throughout.
Yes.
Some amazingly funny lines from Andrews throughout it. But that, using it as a mechanism of distancing as well, is quite a useful and interesting thing he's done. You know, they're just, it's really British, isn't it? Just wanting to find some fun in some bleak moments.
Yeah, completely. It really, there are moments I feel like, oh, that's 2.4.
Yeah.
There is a 2.4 element there.
Yeah.
And health and efficiency as well. It does have the humour to make it.
Yeah, it's got Andrew's voice, isn't it? Definitely.
Oh, 100%, yes. And as I always say, right, a good writer does.
Yeah,
you can
totally.
Don't need to know who it is to just tell. So now we go on to Canon Black, Ian Richardson's character, who I think he was the one who dismissed Strange. We know that. And he is someone who you are always questioning. You question him, but you know he's up to no good. He is essentially the villain. He's almost like the puppet master.
He's Ian Richardson.
Yes.
And I know that's like really lazy, but he's so good.
Yeah.
In this, I think. And it's such a good bit of casting.
Yeah.
And again, where it suffers a little bit, and I think this is, it gets less so through the episodes, that he's quite separate from the action. And when he does meet up with Strange or Jude, the chemistry on screen there really crackles.
Mm.
Can chemistry crackle? I'm sure it can. That's probably some sort of chemical reaction. I don't know. If there'd been more of it, would it have been less interesting? I don't know. But when he is talking to Strange, you can see that relationship clearly. And we don't see quite enough of that at the start, I don't think.
Yeah, it definitely, I think, as I say, for me, it does get better as it goes on. It feels like it's just finding its feet and its voice and its style. Well, not the style. I think style's pretty clear from the beginning, but it's...
The style is really interesting, isn't it? The first episode has got this amazing back and forth between gothic imagery and like modern mise-en-scene imagery.
Yeah, yeah.
And it starts to marry them really well. Like that shot where Ian Richardson walks through the hospital ward in his big cloak, and that's like a really strong, powerful image that kind of goes, oh yeah, all right, these two worlds do sort of coexist.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's good direction by Joe Hearn there.
Yeah, it's he is kind of like an imposing villain in a way, but it's done, but he is so good at playing tongue-in-cheek with that seriousness, that there is a personality. I mean, obviously, he's best known for House of Cards.
Yeah.
The famous line is, I couldn't possibly comment. And he just knows how to... He has a look about him. I love that generation of actors.
Yeah, it's not one note, is it?
No.
He could just be villainous. He could sort of like have his cloak around his type yes. thing, couldn't he?
Yeah.
But no, there's he's not unlikable. He's the sort of boss you would kind of, you know, you could kind of take the piss out of him to his face a bit.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah.
But he might sort of suddenly snap and break your neck.
Well, I'm going to go down a little bit further on the cast list, because I there's a character I put second to last, who I think links perfectly now. It's obviously Doddington.
Played by the guy who went on to play Dirk Gently, I believe.
In Penny Dreadful.
I'm sure he played Dirk Gently as well.
Ooh, I'm trying to think. I'm not sure about that.
But he was also in other things. But he's great.
Yeah, he was recently in Four Lives, which was the BBC drama about the Stephen Port serial killer. And in this, he's almost like Cannon Black's secretary.
Yeah.
And he's a very meek character, you know, totally the butt of his jokes. And obviously in this series, he's about 22 or something, but yeah, looks about 18. And he is, there is a bit of a dog with a bone scenario here. And I would like, I think there's one bit where Cannon Black just talks about, you know, about his balls dropping and stuff. So there is that sort of, you know, even though he's a priest, he's not afraid of kind of more blue humour, shall we say.
I like the line Richardson had, I can't remember quite what it was, but can you hand me that thing you haven't seen and I haven't seen so I can look
yes.
quickly?
Yes, he's sort of, because Doddington sort of doesn't, I think he's one of those where he's not in on it completely, he knows, but whatever he's asked to do, he does. As you say, there's something he has to get, which he was told he doesn't know about. He is that kind of, he's the kind of guy, kind of Black, where he will sort of say, you don't know, you know, you didn't see that, did you?
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely knows something's going on.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to know what it is, I don't think.
No, definitely. And so we move on to Toby, who is essentially Strange's Doddington to a certain extent.
Yeah.
He is the sort of IT technical support, played by Andrew Lee Potts, who went on to do Primeval.
Oh.
And this character, you know, he's kind of a typical sort of lad in a way, and very much an IT guy at the same time. There's a very funny scene involving pictures of naked ladies on the wall.
Yeah,
which is actually something that happened with me when I was younger as well. So that made me, with my brother's uni house.
Right.
And it just made me laugh because it created a very funny scene.
Yeah, it's what he would have done. And yeah, like you say, it's a real moment that. And there's a, without wanting to give any twists away, there's a really good twist with him in one of the episodes.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is.
Really, really well done that.
Oh, yeah.
And he's
a character.
Yeah, he's not sort of one note, is he?
No. It goes back to what I say about Andrew with 2.4, that every character, even the ones who are essentially the comic relief or not necessarily the regular or the star, they have a moment or an episode, as you say with Toby, where you learn a bit more about them and you feel that there's more behind their character.
Well, Andrew does this neat trick that a lot of writers should do more, which is every character thinks they're the hero in the story.
Yes exactly.
And I think sort of Toby certainly does think that.
And then another person who works with Strange and Toby is Kevin,
mm-hmm.
who is a young man who has Down syndrome, and he's a character who essentially has premonitions, visions, feelings of something coming.
Yeah, sort of Cordelia in Angel in a way, but not able to articulate it, which is really interesting choice as well.
Yeah, Timmy Lang's a good in this as Kevin, because I think
very diverse cast all around, actually, without even drawing attention to itself as being so.
I mean, bear in mind this is 20 years ago, and nowadays, you know, that the whole kind of diversity and representation is very much the thing. But I think what Strange does better than a lot of today's shows is actually make them characters and make them more than just what their identity is and what their representation is.
They're real people.
Because Kevin is someone who, you know, he's not portrayed as a victim. He's also sometimes potentially portrayed as a suspect.
And also, he's their sort of mole as well.
Yes, he is.
Which is nice.
he's got importance, really. He's an important character.
Yeah, he certainly has agency, yeah.
And so we then have, I think, the main cast is Joey, who's Jude's son, who has an interesting arc.
Yes.
And also, I think with him, he is a very... Well, without giving it away, there is, going back to what I said about the demon hitting close to Jude's home, it very much revolves around Joey.
The big reveal at the end of that final episode, that actually made me go, wow. Yeah,
it's good, isn't it?
Wow. I really wasn't expecting that. And now I've said it, everybody's going to watch it, expect it. But they've done studies. If you know a twist is coming, you enjoy it more.
Weirdly. Yeah, I know. It was kind of one of those where... It's something that's been done in films. Mm-hmm. It's been done in an episode of something before.
It certainly was done in Superman.
Yeah, it was done in The X-Files.
Superman Returns, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
But because it's done in a serialized format and it's the central to Jude's character arc, you actually are invested in it. And so when these things develop or happen, and eventually the big reveal, as you mentioned, it's so satisfying.
Yeah, and unexpectedly satisfying.
And he's not annoying.
No, he's really good, the kid, isn't he?
He's also, I also feel like he's played in a way as though you feel like I don't know about how he was actually, the young actor in it was told to, William Tomlin was his name. Mm. He was not told how to play it, but you almost feel like if you gave a child actor the knowledge of what they've done, what's going on, they could play it in a certain way because that's what kids would do.
He could have gone arch with it.
Yeah, he could have.
Yeah.
I mean, I know like in other films, where horror films where you have a child involved, sometimes they don't tell them and then the performance is even more better because the kid doesn't have a clue. They're playing it more believable.
I think also he writes kids really well. I know we keep saying how good he is as a writer, but he is a really good writer. So let's say it. And I think a lot of people don't write kids well, and that makes the performance from good kid actors not seem like good performances.
Yes.
But that said, he's really good, the kid in this.
Oh yeah, it's a marrying of good writing and a good performance.
Yeah, and I do wonder, does Andrew have a sort of hand? He must have a hand in casting.
I think so. Yeah, I think he does. I mean, I know with the 2.4. with some of the interviews I've done for the book, that he was very much involved in the process.
Well, he made
as
good
well.
Choices.
It's a great cast, and later on we'll talk about some guest cast as well.
Some really good guest cast,
and it's so I think good time to go on to sort of the production values of the show, and you know, I mean, it's interesting what you say about 1997. You know, and that, because bear in mind, if you think in 5 years, probably the biggest change in TV was those end of the 90s, the beginning of the 2000s, because of the change of the aspect ratio filming, you went from 4:3 to 16:9, which 2.4 was very much in that category. And so watching Strange now, it's not HD, but you can see it's definitely off the time and of the filming.
Yes, they're upping this. What they did in sitcom was drop the budgets.
Yes.
What they did in drama was up the budgets.
Definitely.
And you really sort of see that around this time.
Exactly. And one of the things I like about the show, and another thing I was going to mention about the unfair comparisons to Buffy, is Andrew said in an interview at the time that he had never seen Buffy, the TV show. He'd seen the movie, but didn't like it. So that's why he never went to the show.
That put a lot of people off the series.
Yeah.
I was a big champion of it once I found it. Yeah. And I was getting people to go, oh, you should watch this. It's really good. Oh, the movie's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But the TV show isn't. And I think it really didn't help here. I didn't think it mattered so much in America so much. But it really hindered it here, I think.
Definitely. And then when it was discovered, it was popular. And then because it became popular, people then said, oh, it's Strange, it's just new Buffy. But the big difference is... I mean, you go back to Millennium, and I agree, it is more like Millennium, because I think, and even Angel, because what I always say about good horror is you can very easily manipulate the look of the lighting, even in daylight hours. So like Buffy, When it's dark in the nighttime in the cemetery, it's very brooding. It's very dark. It's very atmospheric. But in the daytime, when it's in the sunshine, it's bright.
And garish and Californian, as you
said. Yeah, it's very much playing to that style.
Yeah.
In Millennium, an angel, even when it's daytime, it's very grey.
It's grey.
And so strange.
Yeah, strange. Yeah. I think also the other thing that probably didn't help with the comparisons to other shows was the opening credits.
Yes.
The title sequence, it's very X-Files-y.
Yeah.
With the headlines and the close-ups of badges and things. It's a different colour palette.
Yeah.
And it's a very different music.
Yeah.
But I think it's immediately putting your head into that space.
Yes.
In a perhaps, I really think opening title sequences are really, really important.
Yes.
And they're often massively overlooked. So again, Buffy's opening credits is incredibly clever.
Yes.
It starts as this, and like all demon-y gothic. And then that guitar kicks in. You start seeing these pretty young faces.
Yeah.
And it really sets the tone of the show. In the same way that Angel does as well, actually.
Yes, Angel's good.
Angel's is really clever. It does the same and Millennium. Sort of trick. And Millennium and the X-Files. And I think British shows overlook them a lot more.
Yeah.
As things.
I do agree, because I do think that there are some introductions to TV shows where you think that was not thought through at all.
Luther is my big bugbear.
Oh, really?
I think Luther's an incredibly good operatic, brilliant series. And it has this really sort of odd title sequence, which makes sense after about 7 or 8 episodes of it.
Yeah.
But doesn't fit the character of the show, especially after the really sort of big opening scene of Luther as well. Yeah. It's just really incongruous. I don't think Strange is incongruous. I think it's a good choice of titles for it.
What about the theme tune?
Big gothic. I quite liked it. It perhaps needed something more modern in there, in the same way that Buffy does, just to sort of kick home that, you know, this is now, but it's then as well.
I've got to say, I quite enjoy it now, because I know from the pilot, there's a little, it's a bit less big, it's a bit less loud. Certainly in the beginning, the opening of the music is a bit less loud. It's by Dan Jones, who composed.
It really fits the end credits.
Yes, it does.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dan Jones composed the theme tune. He's done a lot of film and TV, but before this, he'd done Shadow of the Vampire.
Tell you who would have been good as well. Joby Talbot. Is it Joby Talbot who did the League of Gentlemen music?
Yes. Yeah.
His sound would have fit really well in that.
When you say League of Gentlemen, it's that Britishness. There is something about it that feels a bit like a gothic and a bit more
church organ music.
Exactly. It's sort of, I mean, as I say, I think it does sort of overall work for me, and the sort of way it builds the music throughout as well, that the tension is really cool.
There's a lot of music throughout it as well, in a way that perhaps shows weren't doing as much at the time here.
Yes.
I think they probably do it more now, but and a very American use of music. And that's not, I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. I'm just saying that's the choice they made. I don't think it works.
And as special effects go, I mean, I'm always very much a believer in the more you can create something with, you know, paper mache.
Well, to give the actors something to play against. That's why that volume thing on they're using for the Star Wars things works really well. It makes... It brings out performances. I do wonder if the quality of it that we were watching made the effects suffer a little. I always find bad quality video makes what are otherwise good-looking effects not look good.
Yeah.
But that big tree demon was fantastic.
It really was.
I loved it.
I loved the reveal of it.
Yeah.
It was so like, whoa.
Yeah, it was, and because of the way they hadn't really done a demon like that up to that point, it really helped as well.
I was going to mention
a really good episode, actually. It was a really good mystery episode, but
that was really good. Yeah, it was a really cool way of doing it, because then in one episode there's an explosion, and that is the most CGI And well, let's put it like this, right? Bear in mind, this is 3 years late, 2-3 years later, you had Doctor Who come back.
Yes.
Christopher Eccleston's era. And it's amazing now, bear in mind, that was my era. Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, it was a 3-5 year. It's amazing how Christopher Eccleston's series in 2005 has aged in CGI terms badly. Yes. But David Tennant's first series in 2006 has actually aged very well. And there's some similar CGI effects.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is to do with the way that they were implementing the effects.
Yes.
And I'm sure budget massively increased after that first series doing so well as well.
Definitely. And I think with Strange, there are, I just love the way that actors are put, you know, makeup on actors and the way they look. And
oh yeah, the makeup on Strange at the end is quite disturbingly good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I had to go back and go, well, why is he so bad? I had to literally go back and find out what had happened to make him look like that.
And
so he took something, yeah.
And I like the way there's one episode where another monster, human monster, comes out of nowhere, and it's really good. And there's one episode with a monster which, in a way, looks very naff. And I'm going to say in red. I think you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And yet, it reminds me, though, in a way, that it's a very small monster, but does a lot of damage. And I found that really interesting because I've seen it in other horror and film and TV where you can sometimes think something that looks like it won't harm you does a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was really cool. I like the settings as well. So for me, I like the fact that you have a hospital.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's loads of, I mean, if you're frightened of hospitals, this series is not going to, health and efficiency seems like a heaven. If health and efficiency is heaven, Strange Hospital's hell, quite honestly.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. You know, it needs, the amount of hospital scenes in Buffy and the X-Files, you do need hospitals in these things.
Well,
and to have it as a main place is a really good idea.
I will say with Buffy, I know Andrew hadn't seen it, but I think, in a way, I think if you're horror minded, a lot of people have a very similar idea. We all know what things are quite scary and what things have that foreboding settings and stuff. But there was one episode of Buffy where she goes into hospital with, I think, a fever, and then it's this idea there's a monster killing, and she doesn't know if it's her or if it's a genuine monster, which is a great one episode. But Andrew was peppering this throughout the series.
Yeah.
And you've got, I just like the way you have the hospital, which is Jude's workplace. You've got the church, which, you know, churches are very foreboding places, and they can also be very comforting places as well.
Yeah, totally.
And then you've got her house, which is just a really kind of normal domestic setting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love Strange's sort of
den.
Den, yeah, with
it's
Toby.
A kid's den, isn't it?
It feels I was going to say, like, with it does feel like something that you would imagine, had the show taken off, they could have created a toy set. Like,
God, a Lego set would have been
Lego, like a Lego set. And I know that they did, like, a TARDIS toy, and I know they did the library, Sunnydale High Library, was turned into a toy. So it just feels like somewhere, or like if you've ever seen the Sarah Jane Adventure, Torchwood and stuff like that, that's the sort of setting you're looking at. But it feels very real. It doesn't feel like it's not grand.
No,
it just feels realistic.
British, in that way that really works.
Yeah.
And also nice that the hospital, going back to the hospital, actually is not just a setting for the effects of the stories.
It
is a place for the stories, but also it spurns some stories that you know the one I mean.
Yes, I do. As I say, you never feel safe in a hospital again after watching this.
Definitely not.
And so I think for me that I think we both agreed that it got better as it went on.
Yes.
I think episode 2, which is essentially the first main episode of the series 1, I did feel was a tempting pilot and a second pilot. And
also, Strange isn't in it that much.
No, he isn't. It's more a Jude story.
Yes.
And I just, and the kind of, there's the sort of ending on the bus sort of was it worked all right, but it was similar to it was it too similar to the pilot, really.
I thought it's more interesting when Jude rescues Strange than when Strange rescues Jude.
Yes, yeah.
In the same way that, again, the X-Files, they try and help have Scully rescue Mulder as much as the other way around.
Yep, and I'll say that, yeah, I agree.
There's jumble sale in it, really British, really creepy. I don't know how they make a jumble sale creepy, but they have done. And some really good jokes in that one. There's a really good Whopper joke about Flame Grilled Whopper, and a really good joke about... Toby says, I was having sex at the time. She goes, well, lucky you're on your own then.
Yes, yes. She's so good at that dry delivery, Samantha Womack. And she was really, not... I think there was always a feeling that she just sort of rolled her eyes at them. But she respected...
No, she didn't.
Well, no,
she
well, no really I mean, didn't. When I think she rolled her eyes when they were being childish, but respected them for what they did.
Yeah, yeah, totally, absolutely.
Especially with the scene with the naked ladies on the wall.
Yeah, she and how she reacted to the mention of hookers just really quickly.
Yeah,
a really good, clever.
Yeah,
because she is clever without it being, oh, you're a nerd.
Yeah,
in the way that it could have done.
Yeah, she has and the way I love the backstories to her. With when she was at university and the people who are helping her, how they get involved, how they become sort of in danger as well and stuff, And I like the range of the settings and the monsters. So you have ideas. And I love, there's one episode where you have, it's going back to that Evil Dead thing where it's the point of view of the monster.
Mm.
That was really good.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff. And it does the Doctor Who trick of making everyday things scary.
Yes, I agree.
Which is a really hard trick to pull off.
Yeah.
But a really effective one.
But that's what Andrew was good at doing in comedy. He was finding he found the humour in everyday life. He found the scariness in everyday life and the humour as well.
Yeah.
And
true.
So you had all these brilliant ideas and good set pieces, but then always, I just found it very intelligent. It was in a way you just really felt like he was building this world, and you can, because as I say, if you watch the comedies, there's all these references to cult TV and very clever in 2.4, so many references to obscure things in history. Even you can tell Andrew's brain is, it feels like Andrew's found his, well, not found his voice. He's obviously found his voice in comedy, but he found a real sense of imagination in a horror. He was able to make sitcoms imaginative and innovative, and then he was able to really expand it in a genre that was that's built on innovation and imagination.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It would be interesting to see him attack other genres as well. And he sort of obviously went on to do that with Rob Grant as well.
Yeah,
of course.
The Quandhorn experiment.
That's it. Yeah.
So I think, what was your favorite episode?
I think that's the one with
You cut out there for a moment.
Okay,
sorry. What was your favorite episode?
It's the one I can't pronounce. Dubuyik, I think. The penultimate episode.
Yeah.
And that really sets up the final episode really well as well.
Yeah.
It was a good mystery, that one.
Yeah.
It was a good new villain.
Yeah.
Vehicle. I don't know how to say it. It really interesting how he brought the demon over.
Mm.
And there wasn't, he didn't try to misdirect with Michael, what's his name? The Tyres. Is it? It's not Tyres, is it? From space, but it's a guy who looks like him with a deep voice. Oh, I know. Oh, it's the guy from The Office, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's sort of him. And that I don't want to say what it is, but the skirting board moment.
Yes, yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Definitely.
Just when that happens, like, whoa.
Yeah. And he was as you say, I think that with the demon that we mentioned earlier, just like fantastic.
Yeah. Moment. Was that your favorite or was yours?
My favorite was Costa Burra with the Banshee.
Yeah.
Let's put it like this. It's a banshee, about a banshee, but it's about something that happens nearly 100 years earlier and how it comes back around. And the idea of showing, I am such a fan of when you see period pieces in a series, and then that's generally a modern show, based show, but then it comes back around and you've got scenes set in the past and the costumes and everything, and everyone's... I just love things like that. And that was the moment, I mean, like I say, the last four episodes I watched in one day, and that, for me, I was like, oh, I'm hooked.
Yeah.
Just thought that's me. And I love the idea.
It's the one that got me sort of going, oh, I'll watch the next one now. Definitely. Yes. You got a bit of backstory.
Yeah.
Which really helped.
Yeah.
And used as a good misdirect.
Totally.
You had that wound of his, a really nice, interesting mystery.
Yeah.
You had a kind of Scooby-Doo sort of investigation going on. And you had a really good moment where he calls the search engine a search motor.
Yes.
Which I thought was a really good line.
And a great and really great older actors in it as well. I always admire when you see actors like the Ian Michener who can, you know, I think who do these really outlandish parts, like Gene Marsh, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian McKellen does it as well. I admire that they just play it so realistically and are so open to playing these kind of genre characters.
Yeah, definitely. And I think weirdly, I know we said British TV doesn't do horror that often.
Mm.
British horror movies, you can certainly see a lot of these actors doing great turns in those movies as well. You know, certainly the 70s, 80s. And
oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
They were Hammer and everything were...
Yeah, and the way that Hot Fuzz plays up to that is really nice.
Yes.
It's a different story.
So I think... For me, how did you feel about the final? Well, we said we like enjoyed the reveals in the final episode, but how did you feel about it as the ending of the series?
I'm slightly disappointed that I couldn't then watch another one.
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, I really want to know what comes next.
Yeah.
It wasn't a cliffhanger. It certainly had an ending.
Yeah.
But it certainly didn't leave everything neat.
No, there isn't a moment, there isn't like someone's about to plunge to their death moment at the end. It does, as you say, feels like it's setting up arcs for another series.
Definitely, yeah.
And I actually liked the characters as well by the end. I was invested in their stories.
Yeah, definitely. And it really doesn't do any harm to put Tom Baker in your last episode, does it?
I mean, if there's anyone who plays a blind priest.
Yeah, but he wasn't hamming it either, which he could easily have done.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very much he was delightfully Tom Baker without being over the top Tom Baker.
Yeah, he in the same way that Brian Blessed in I Claudius is a totally different Brian Blessed than what you expect.
So I think this is a moment now to kind of sort of talk about the show's how the show was received.
Mm-hmm.
So the pilot was shown in March 2002 on a Saturday night. 5.79 million viewers watched it,
That's not bad, actually.
Not bad. Even then, TV ratings were going down because of digital.
I see that one of the later episodes was getting 3.7.
And
that was up against MIT, whatever that was. So the fact that I remember Strange but not MIT tells you everything.
Exactly.
And I found a really not particularly good review in the stage. They were quite scathing about it. But weirdly, in the previews to it, it got quite a lot of sort of... oh, this is the pick of the week type thing.
Yeah, I noticed that. I went to some of the archives on the newspaper's sites.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now, yeah.
And there were people who I think got it and got that it was, you know, a bit out there. And it's fun as well. I didn't feel it was pretentious.
No.
It was
in a
really
way that British drama can be.
Yes.
This is why I love the fact that it's funny, because good drama should be funny in my head.
I agree.
And the best writers do make it funny. The Jimmy McGovern's Cracker, for instance, is funny.
Yeah.
And there's none of that brooding, oh, let's just watch a character stare at stuff for 5 minute type stuff. It felt pacey and fun.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, it takes itself seriously, but it doesn't take itself seriously. I know that's a...
Yeah. It takes itself seriously, but didn't play it seriously.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's real.
But it's not hamming it. It's not tongue in cheek.
No.
But it's not trying to be worthy, which I think a lot of British drama is really guilty of.
Yeah, and I think there was one review I read that said they felt it was a bit of a Hammer film. I kind of see where they were coming from, but I also feel like the Hammer films were of their time and of their acting style. They were scary for their time.
Yeah, still can be as well, some of them. But I think possibly it, because it defies comparisons. I know we keep making comparisons, but that's because it defies comparisons. You need to grab onto something to try and explain it.
Yeah.
And I think when you're trying to push or review a show, the fact you have to make difficult comparisons to make it, make your argument, probably says more about the show than it says about your review, to be honest.
Well, I think for me, it's one of those where trying to work out what made it not click.
Yes.
Firstly, not repeating the pilot was stupid.
Big bad wrong decision, totally. And it was moved around a lot in the schedules, I believe, wasn't it, as well, which didn't help.
Yeah, it was. So its main time was 9 o'clock on a Saturday. And then I think after a couple of weeks when the series was on, it was then moved to like 10 past 10 and then later in the evening. And it's interesting when I think of early 2000s of dramas, you know, I just think of things like, 2000 Acres of Sky, Monica the Glen, Born and Bred, these really...
Yeah, that sort of Sunday evening drama.
Twee, boring.
Cozy. Yeah.
And the other things that were on, you know, obviously Casualty was still on, The Bill was still on at that time. You know, I mean, I was, what, 7 or 8 when this was on? 7 and 8 when these episodes were shown. And obviously it's one of those where if my parents didn't watch it and if I didn't see an advert for it on something like I was watching, then I don't remember it. But really, it was definitely one of the more original shows. I mean, I think 2002 and 2003 had Spooks, which was quite different to TV at the time.
As you're saying that, I'm wondering if it had any impact on the decision to bring back Doctor Who.
Yes.
In the sense that maybe they were sort of scrabbling around for, okay, can we do this thing that Doctor Who used to fulfill, but in a slightly later, older slot. And I don't know how far along Russell T. Davis was with sort of negotiate. There's a really good book, apparently. I haven't read it, and it's on its way to me now. I ordered it, about the BBC trying to bring Doctor Who back between 99 and 2005. So it'd be interesting to have a look at that and see if Strange had any impact on their choices there.
Yeah, because I think I remember it was announced in, I think it was Awesome of 03 that Russell T was doing it.
Oh, it was as early as that. Okay.
So this would have been what, a few months after Strange. And inevitably at that point, negotiations would have probably been either starting or at least somebody was thinking about it. And then you'd have to see what's the state of telly at the time to weigh up whether it's gonna work or not.
Yeah. So it must have been on people's minds then. So
definitely.
Really interesting, yeah.
For me, I think as well as the pilot not being repeated being a big problem, especially as considering it's still unlike something like Two Doors Down, which has a pilot episode, for example, which is very a pilot, and then the series goes in a completely different direction. The pilot, what happens in the pilot, Strange, actually sets up everything.
Oh, it hammers and nails the premise straight in, yeah.
So for people who didn't see it, it was a big mistake not to show it. And then they wouldn't understand what was going on in the first one of the main series. But I think it was totally the wrong channel, the wrong time slot, and the wrong time of year. Because if you think about, firstly, going to the time of year, I wouldn't want to watch a horror show in the spring or summer.
And it still would have been light, possibly, when it came on. It should have been an autumn show.
Yeah, it was filmed in the autumn and winter. Yeah. And you can tell.
Yeah, should have been an autumn show. It should have been on. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to have been on BBC Two, but I think it might have fared better on BBC Two. And
I think,
maybe a Thursday. I don't know. It's one of those. Yeah,
because and I don't say that in I say BBC Two as well or even three because I don't and I don't say that in a negative way. I think BBC Two and certainly BBC Three have produced some of the best dramas ever.
Yeah.
And also, I think, as well, and I'm trying to say this without sounding snobby, but I do think it was potentially a bit too complex for a mainstream crowd.
Certainly for a Saturday night crowd.
Yeah, because if you think about the X-Files, right, the only other show they'd ever been on BBC One properly was X-Files, but that started on BBC Two.
Yeah.
Then it went to BBC One. And the thing about that show is that it was essentially a procedural drama with paranormal outcomes.
Yeah. It but had the, something to latch on to straight away, didn't it?
Yeah, and people, and it was so different. But I think as well, the reason it eventually went down and the ratings went back to BBC Two was because the mythology arc got too big.
It wasn't something you could dip in and out of.
No.
And this isn't something you can dip in and out of. Even though it is standalone stories.
Yeah. And then
you kind of need to know the world you're in.
Yes, because of the arc and the sort of strands are going through, you've got to know where you're up to. And also, X-Files was eventually moved to Saturday on BBC One.
Okay.
So I think that didn't help either, because then the main audience who would watch something like that wouldn't be watching telly, or maybe not want to watch that, shall we say.
I think Sky also then poached it as well, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
So, and then I think had it been on like 10 years later, say on BBC Three, it could have worked better, because if I think of shows that I grew up with, like The Fades or In the Flesh.
I was going to say, yeah, The Fades really would have fit around the same sort of idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The Fades is really good. Yeah.
It's brilliant. I love it. I think it's a really underrated show. And I think it's very similar to Strange in the sense it is very British.
Yeah.
At its heart. Even though that's probably, and that's more Buffy, should I say, than Strangers.
That's much more Buffy than Strangers, yeah.
And also Netflix, you know, it definitely feels like something Netflix would make now.
Yeah, I think it could have, if you'd gone the streaming route with it these days, you could have probably had a bit more of a through arc.
Yeah.
As well.
And I think with Saturday Night Drama, as you say, it was, when you think about the comeback Saturday Night Drama had with Doctor Who, and then Merlin and Robin Hood, these were family shows. And then
this
you
isn't
had
a family show.
It's not a family show at all.
No, I can't imagine my gran watching it.
No, that's the thing. And even like a Sunday night, when I was growing up, it was like Downton Abbey was Sunday night drama. And then there was Homeland. So sometimes there were adult stuff on.
It's really interesting how different nights on telly feel different.
Yes.
And, you know, that's not an accident. And we're not imagining that. That's deliberate. They know who's watching what, which is why it was an odd choice that this was a Saturday night drama.
What's weird is that and something I totally forgot about until a few weeks ago when I was thinking and doing the backstory research for Strange, was that ITV then did a show in 2009 with Philip Glenister called Demons. Which didn't really last at all. And I only remember seeing one episode, but then that didn't quite work. I mean, I think they did Primeval.
Yeah.
But again, another family
Apparitions,
show.
I think I spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
Ultraviolet, that was a Channel 4 show, and that really worked.
Yeah. Is that about vampires?
That's vampires, but really modern day vampires. And I think it's Idris Elba's first series as well. So,
So there you go. I mean, I think it was just a very ahead of its time show.
I do wonder why they decided to put it on a Saturday.
Yeah.
It's an intro. Maybe it was just so big a budget it needed to be. Every also, time. You're in an episode of it, by the way. I don't know if you noticed this.
I'm in an episode of it.
You are, yeah. Well, in a way. In the WYIC, I still don't know how to say that, the tree episode.
Oh, yes.
JD Skip Higher.
Oh, yes.
Made me smile.
I love that. It's a sign. It was meant to be. It was planted all those many years earlier. And I think there were some great familiar faces in it as well. Yeah. So, firstly, there was Anna Massey.
Mm-hmm.
Who was in? She's an actress who has worked for many years, and she was in Peeping Tom from 1960 and Alfred Hitchcock's film Frenzy.
Yeah, she was excellent.
She was. That was a good episode. She was in. She was a very good villain.
Yeah, definitely.
And then Jim Carter was in it in one episode, and so was Imelda Staunton in
she
different episodes. Yeah,
she was really good. Actually, she didn't get to play against many people, but. She
was more
really,
on her own, yeah.
Yeah, she really made some good choices with it. Really good.
Imelda Staunton was also in If You See God, Tell Him, which was Andrew Marshall. It's a great show, isn't it?
Yeah. I wish that kind of was repeated or was on streaming or something. I've got it on DVD. And
same.
I think it was out on DVD for about a week before it disappeared as well.
Yeah. She was.
That's a really dark show, isn't it? That one.
Yeah, it is.
And I always forget Adrian Everson's in it.
Yes. Yeah. And Richard Pryor's obviously. Yeah. I mean, him and Ever Decreasing Circles. Those two shows make me like Richard Pryor a lot.
God, Ever Decreasing Circles is a phenomenal piece of work,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And the thing about Imelda Staunton, she's married to Jim Carter.
She,
yeah. And the other thing that's really strange about this is both Jim Carter and Ian Richardson, about a couple of years before this, were both in 102 Dalmatians live action film with Glenn Close.
Oh, wow.
Jim Carter played a police officer and Ian Richardson played a lawyer, I think.
Is Hugh Laurie in one of those?
He's in the first one.
Yeah.
And opposite Mark, what's Ron Weasley's dad's name?
Williams,
and yeah, he was in Health and Efficiency, and
he was excellent in that, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he's excellent at everything. But
and I remember the line I always remember about Ian Richardson in 102 Dalmatians is he always says, "I'm not about to start representing animals in court," which is a great line. Fun. I loved that film when I was growing up. Going back to Samantha Womack, she was of course in the first episode of Health and Efficiency.
Yes,
as the director of the advert they were making. Right, yeah. And she was also a couple of years before Strange, because I think she'd had a baby at this point. So this was like her big comeback.
Yes, I read that. This was her, that they were pushing her more than they were Richard Corr because she'd been off TV for a while.
And she was also, I think one of the things she did before she went away was a film called Up and Under with Neil Morrissey. I was looking
at that earlier.
Yeah, and Gary Olsen.
I want to go and watch that now. Gary Olsen's in it. And I particularly want to watch it specifically because Gary Olsen's in it.
Yeah, and that was 1998. So, all the way it links together. So I'll definitely try and seek that and watch that. And then, of course, we said earlier, Tom Baker was in it. So that's nice. I mean, obviously he was Doctor Who, but he's been in other things.
He's always good when he pops up in genre.
Yeah, he's great. He's just great.
And Sean Harris, of course, is in it, who went on to be
in
the Mission Impossible films. He's so creepy, that boy.
Sean Harris, he's one of those actors who, whenever he's in anything, you just feel... He's probably a really nice guy in real life, but he's just a very creepy in everything he's in. He's got that creepy face.
Yeah, I think Christopher McQuarrie on one of his... director's commentaries, I think, for Fallout, says you never know what choice he's going to make as an actor in any given scene. Yeah. And it's always exactly the right choice.
Yeah, definitely. He also played Ian Curtis in 24 Hour Past People. He also played Ian Brady opposite Maxine Peake's Myra Hindley. Oh,
God, yes, he did indeed. That, yeah.
Which was very, very good. Very disturbing.
Yeah, chilling, that was.
And then he was also in a horror film recently called Possum.
Oh.
Which was written by Matthew Holness, who was Garth Marenghi. So yeah, he was definitely the right choice, a right fit for
There's
Strange.
A real Garth Marenghi moment, actually, in the very first pilot of this, where, it's the electricity. And it really reminded me of, it's in the water. So, you know, there are cliches for a reason, and it does use cliches in a nice way.
Yeah. So I think to wrap up, the chat overall, you know, you said at the beginning you wanted to sort of wonder how you would feel about Strange Devil from our talk. What do you think of it now after our chat?
You have brought me round to it. I would say I was ambivalent to it. And I completely agree with you that once it gets going, once it starts to explore Strange a bit more, it really does make you want to watch more. I would like to now have seen more. And I think we said the same about Health and Efficiency. We would like to have seen another series.
What I enjoy about Andrew's shows is, and I think Strange very much, even though it is a genre drama, they are always, when they are the most enjoyable, it's that you watch them, they're entertaining, but you always have a feeling of, this is very unusual, this is very different.
I think that's true. And I think we always talk... We used to talk about 2.4 Children as being this cozy 90s kind of sitcom. And when we all watched it at the time, though, it was like, well, no, this is something different, which is why it really stuck with us.
Yes.
And it was like, was that what I thought it was? Because everyone seems to think it was more like that Robert Lindsay one.
Yes, yeah.
My Family. And this is, I think, very very similar, like you say. It's the word haunting. Is that the right word? It kind of just sticks with you and kind of buries into your brain a little bit and starts going, you should have a little think about me a little bit more, because there's quite a lot more to me than you think.
I enjoy, this is why I've done the podcast, because I feel like there have been so much to talk about that just haven't been talked about for a long time. So I really enjoyed the conversations about his, about 2.4 episodes and also the other shows as well in a summary format.
Yeah.
Well, Simon, it's been great talking to you again. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you very much for having me again.
And would you like to, what would you like to plug while you've got the opportunity?
You can have a look at my website. There's all sorts in there. I suspect there'll be some things about Strange Up when this episode's out, just as a little bonus for everyone. That's simondunn.me.uk, and you'll be able to find my books as well on there as well.
Well, thank you very much, and anything new in the future I'll put out for everyone to read. Thank you so much to everyone listening, and as I say, happy Halloween. I hope you've enjoyed your rewatch of The Lady Vanishes and Carry On Screaming, and we will be back with a new episode of Don't Slam Your Podcast very soon. Until then, stay safe and don't have nightmares.